America is an amazing country filled with wonderful people who do incredible things. But too often, the media and liberal politicians ignore big parts of our nation and the people who make it work. So I'm speaking with leaders and policymakers who deal with real problems every day. I'm Ronna McDaniel, and this is Real America. Today, we're doing a special polling edition of Real America. I'm going to be speaking with Kellyanne Conway, who conducted a poll on election integrity, to cut through the media's false narrative and see what the American people actually think. So I'm so excited to have my dear friend Kellyanne on my podcast with me. Welcome to Real America.
Thank you, Ronna, but congratulations on your podcast. It's truly incredible.
Well, I'm so excited to have you. And one of the reasons that we wanted to sit down today, because I know you have not been out in the media a lot and you're making an exception for me, which I really appreciate, is because, as many of our listeners may not know, you're not only the first woman to successfully helm a presidential win for a Republican, but you also had an incredibly successful polling firm and worked incredibly hard in Republican politics for a long time, helping candidates navigate issues. And I know I've listened to you for a long time. And one of the things that we asked you to do with the RNC is to conduct a poll on election integrity.
Yes.
And the media is so dishonest in how they are framing many of the laws that are being put forward in states like Florida and Iowa and Georgia, and really dividing it into two lines. One, that Republicans are working to make it harder for people to vote and suppress voting, but two, that these laws are inherently racist. And so I wanted to go through those polls together that you did and the results of what you found with Americans across every political spectrum. Yes. in your findings.
This was a nationwide poll where actually only 29% of the respondents identify as Republican. So less people say, oh, the Republican National Committee commissioned its own poll and they got the results they wanted. Let me repeat, it's a nationwide poll of 800 voters and 29% identify themselves as Republican, 31% Democrat, and 36% Independent, not pledging their allegiance to either party. It was a nationwide survey also stratified according to geography and other demographic features like gender, age, ideology, and such. Also, one thing that really stuck out to me in this poll is we just asked people from the beginning, how important is election integrity to you as an issue when you vote? Is it your top issue? Is it not top and in your top three, not your top three, top 10, not in your top 10? 63% said it was their top or in their top three. This is very much on the minds of American voters right now. They want to make sure that post-pandemic, we get voter integrity measures right, that they're fair to everyone, and that we don't use as an excuse measures that were very specific to a once-in-a-century pandemic and the reason why we had changed a few things.
Wrong track, right track. We're 6 months in. 6 months into Biden-Harris. Where do Americans see our country right now in terms of right track, wrong track?
Well, Ronna, we asked the classic polling question. Do you think that the direction of the country is mostly headed in the right direction, or have we gotten off on the wrong track? And a majority of Americans say that we're off on the wrong track. But the intensity is really what stuck out to me. If the wrong track number is 56% and the right direction number is 37%, it's 43% saying strongly wrong track.
Wow.
And it's only 16% saying strongly right direction. Now, there may be many reasons why Americans say that. And too often, pollsters and those reading polls will make their own conclusions. Well, people say that because of the lockdowns. They say that because they're worried about COVID. Oh, no, they're worried about national security. No, it's the border. It's healthcare. It could be all of those things. But all of it is an indictment of the Biden-Harris policies of these first 6 months. People always want to rally around the flag. Well, normally, they want to support their new administrations because they love this country. But they can't even pretend that things are going well. They can't pretend that energy workers did not lose their jobs as they did with the Keystone Pipeline. They can't pretend that the cost of living, the cost of gas, the cost of groceries, everyday life is on the up and up. They're worried about inflation. They're worried about finding workers in their small businesses. If you're a small business owner in this country, and you know that President Trump and Vice President Pence were for the job creator, the job seeker, and also the job holder, their policies helped all three of those groups. But if you're a small business owner in this country, you just went through 18 months of lockdowns.
Yep.
You had to really struggle and think about whether you could survive, let alone thrive into the future. Now you're facing a post-lockdown conundrum of its own, which is people don't want to go back to work. We've incentivized people to stay home.
Yeah, the government is actually competing against these business owners and paying them more to stay out of the workforce when we know our supply chain was disrupted. And these business owners are even more desperate now than they were during the pandemic, because then they were closed for the common good.
Yes.
Now they're being closed because our government's failing.
Yes, because the government is telling us what's good for us, which really just violates all of our freedoms.
And you think that's factoring into the wrong track, right track
number? There's no doubt in my mind. I mean, the other thing is people know what they see.
Okay.
And what they see is a porous border where people and drugs are just flooding over our southern border and into our kids' veins and into our communities. I mean, President Trump did a great job, along with First Lady Melania Trump, of really stemming this drug crisis pre-pandemic in a way that we were investing in treatment and recovery and interdiction and law enforcement, but also prevention and education, taking it seriously for the first time. I don't think Vice President Harris, when she finally did her job and went down to the border or sort of kind of near it, near the epicenter, about 800 miles away from the epicenter of the crisis, she didn't sit there and talk about fentanyl. She didn't mention the drug crisis, the illicit drugs that are pouring over our border, in addition to kids being smuggled and just left there. And so people know what they see, and they're very nervous about the leadership and the direction of this nation. Plus, may I just remind everybody, the Democrats own it. They own that wrong track number because they own all of Washington.
Exactly.
They have a 50-50 tie in the Senate. Kamala Harris, everyone, in case you haven't paid attention, the vice president is in charge of tie breaking. She's broken about 6 or 7 ties already. So she's in a very powerful position. The House is Democratic, and now the White House is Democratic. So they own those wrong
track numbers. They own everything. They own it all. And I want to go back to the election laws, because we've seen this administration really demonize laws that are being changed. And why are these laws being changed? In many cases, because of COVID, states threw away some of their safeguards to election integrity, like the first time you get an absentee ballot, you have to show up in person and show an ID. And because of COVID, they said, no, we're not going to do that. So states are changing and codifying laws to put those safeguards in place, not to make it harder to vote, but to make it harder to cheat. And so you saw the Democrats boycott the MLB game in Georgia. The All-Star game was moved to Colorado. Then you saw the power grab with S1 that failed, trying to federalize the elections. And then that failed. And then the DOJ said, we're going to sue Georgia. Sue Georgia for passing common sense laws. So I want to break down these mm-hmm. laws a little bit in terms of what the American voters are seeing across the spectrum. So first of all, what do most of voters think in terms of how easy it is for them to vote?
Most voters say it was very easy for them to vote. In fact, we did a 1 to 10 scale, and over 93% said it was easy for them to vote. The intensity was very high in that favor. They do think it may be more difficult for other people to vote because they're not sure. And they hear that echoed in the media and the Democratic Party. And sorry if I repeated myself there again and again. And so, but they want to make sure that voting is easy and it's accessible. But they also want to make sure, Rana, that it's legal and it's transparent and that it's verifiable. Why is the word verifiable important? Well, it's important because, is the voter verified? Is the voter ID verified? Is the voter signature verified? This should not be a heavy lift. This should not be controversial, that you want to make sure that the most sacrosanct principle in our United States Constitution, one person, one vote, is upheld for everyone. And there is tripartisan agreement. Majority Republicans, Democrats, and Independents, Rana, all agree that non-citizens should not vote. People who are not registered to vote or qualified to vote should not vote. Again, that seems very non-controversial. Just like the 94% who approve the phrase, I want to make sure that every legal vote counts, mm-hmm. any illegal vote does not count. That by itself is really democracy in action. So I think you just were being very kind and you gave the PG version of what the Democrats are really saying here. They're screaming racist and occasionally sexist and xenophobic. Instead, it's just racist. We tested that too. 77% of Americans surveyed said that they believe that one party, that they believe one party sometimes screams racism to try to shut down conversation. And, you know, if I'm just going to call you names, it's because I never really want to learn your name.
But I think that's so interesting, and I want to go back to that. So 77% of your respondents said that one party is utilizing racism to win, to gain power, but they don't actually believe that the laws are racist. They recognize what the other party is doing, and they're demeaning what racism actually means by saying these laws are racist. Is that what you're finding?
I mean, let's just look at Georgia, for example. Yeah. Okay, you're talking about the new laws in Georgia. We tested pieces of that. They're wildly popular because, again, as you've seen in everybody's polling, including the media polling, large majorities of Americans favor voter ID.
Oh, well, now Stacey Abrams does. Yeah, did you see Stacey Abrams?
That's why I mentioned Georgia.
In April, was against voter ID. Correct. It was voter suppression. All of a sudden, she says, I was always for voter ID. Raphael Warnock. So they know.
They know.
That most voters
support voter
ID.
They're looking at the
ID.
Same kind of polling data.
They're looking at your polling.
They're asking the right kinds of questions, just very objective questions, approve or disapprove of this particular measure. They understand that the lexicon does not favor them because people want transparency, verification. But with transparency also comes competency. What people are saying, Rana, is you can't cast your vote so early and count that same vote so late.
Yeah.
Because what just happened with my arms, there's a whole abyss between those two polls, P-O-L-E-S, where there's just too much room for error, malfeasance, improprieties, maybe fraud, but certainly even innocent error. If I live in North Carolina and I was able to cast my vote in person right around Labor Day 2020, September 6th or so, and I expect that my vote's being counted and banked then. So another thing that we test in here without naming the states that was wildly popular, Rana, is following the lead of those states that count the early votes early. And then add them, tally them up with the day of votes and tell you what happened in that state. So we saw in Ohio and Florida.
Ohio and Florida.
Ohio was called for President Trump at 11 p.m. I think Florida at 11:10. Unfortunately, Arizona at 11:20, but only by one of the networks and the AP. The others didn't do it. But I think Washington State, a big Biden state, is another good example of calling it, counting them, calling them in a timely fashion. With transparency must come competency in our democracy. And competency means that just as in every other part of your life, you have to do things when they're due. People cannot believe that we're counting votes so much later and longer. And that is why people don't, look, people are against counting votes after the postmark, after the election day, after the postmark is there. They already know you can't do that with your college applications. You can't do that with the IRS.
Yeah, I think you're making a really important point that people need to understand. Many of the laws that are being passed by Republicans right now are going to take them down the path of a Florida and Ohio, because I think there is a concern with Americans. The longer it takes to get the vote totals, the more they start to have concerns about our democracy, what's going on, is there shenanigans going on, either way, no matter which party you are in. So the longer you are after election day and it's taking time to get those results and you're still counting votes, it creates doubt on either party.
It does.
That's not good for our elections long term. So many of the laws that are changing, like Georgia, like Iowa, all they're doing is saying we've got to figure out a way to process these votes quicker, process these absentee ballots in a timely fashion so that actually on election day we can get a result.
Yes.
And we don't have like a New York where it took almost a month results. And Democrats, like you said, this is their plan. No voter ID. Let's vote as early as possible and let's count the votes as late as possible. That gulf in between the two is hurting our democracy. And then they lie and say, because we think this doesn't make sense, we're racist.
And there's no indication the founders ever intended that. In fact, every indication is the opposite. And to your point, if we initiated these measures to comply with the demands of a once-in-a-century pandemic, then we'll see you in 99 years. In other words, you can't codify, institutionalize, and make permanent measures that had a time, place, and manner to them. And it's good that I guess it worked, because look at the turnout at the presidential level. Biden got almost, 18 million, 20 million more voters than Obama Biden did. Trump got 12 million more votes or so than he did the first time. So more people did vote. And they're now going to say, see, Kellyanne Arana, we told you more people voted because we allowed them to vote. More people voted. It suggests that they knew how to do that. But when you have 2/3 of the people in your survey saying, I voted by mail, but only people saying I voted by mail, but 2/3 of them saying that I requested a ballot, that means 1/3 of them had not requested a ballot. We're sending ballots to people who are not registered to vote, who are not eligible to vote. Why would you do that? I want to ask the Democrats that question. Let me turn the tables here without calling you a name. Let me ask you an intelligent, rational question. Why would you send me a product and a service that I did not ask, that I did not request, must not want, must not need, or must not have merited, meaning I didn't sign up for that. I don't want that. And so it's why I know you know why they're doing it, because they want to find new voters. Now, implicit in your right to do something is your right to refrain from doing it. And Rana, we know, whether we like it or not, we all know, regardless of your party affiliation, that there are many people in this country who can vote and don't want to. You know, the second question people ask themselves is, for whom should I vote? But the threshold question is, should I bother at all?
Yep.
And we have to respect that as well. Now, I mentioned Georgia before. Let me go back to that quickly. I was going to talk about Stacey Abrams. Stacey Abrams lost the governorship of Georgia in 2018.
She lost.
And became more powerful.
Exactly.
In my view.
And never admitted that she lost, by the way.
Never admitted. She and Hillary.
It hasn't been deplatformed from social media. You know,
she never admitted she lost.
Yeah.
But she went and she turned around and organized in a way that they've registered hundreds of thousands of new people. And so that, again, she's showing, she's making the point that when you reach people and you tell them how they can vote, you're a resource for them, it happens. And we saw record turnout. But people don't, in this survey, people are dead set against tripartisan support, opposition to having drop boxes in one area or another that's more politically in favor of one party or the other. They don't want that. They always want to feel that our democracy is equitable, that the access is equitable, that the results will be equitable and timely. And they also, you know, it's non-controversial for them to have, quote, a transparent bipartisan observation rule that allows members of both parties to be present while counting. You know firsthand as the chairwoman of the party, that was not allowed. 88% say I agree, 8% disagree, because I just basically read apple pie and baseball and puppies.
It's that popular. Exactly.
It's that popular. It's that not controversial. Also, verifying that the signatures match on registration cards and absentee ballots to avoid fraud. 83% agree. That's a majority of people who voted for Biden and Harris. That's a majority of Democrats. It's a majority of independents.
And let's break down what happened this last election. Many of our poll watchers were not allowed to observe. And every American, like you said, or most of them, close in the 80s, think that we should have both parties able to meaningfully observe. That's part of the transparency. So many of the things that are being passed are common sense, and the media is lying about it, and it's important that we break through. And I think part of this podcast is to arm Americans with the knowledge and the vernacular to fight back on a really, really dishonest narrative by Democrats that these measures are racist and meant to make it harder for people to vote, which is just not true. And you know what? If we really were making it hard for people to vote, why did we have record turnout in 2020? It's one or the other, right?
It is.
Either we made it harder for people to vote and people couldn't vote in 2020, or we didn't. I mean, it is so dishonest with what they're doing. And I'm going to go through a few of the measures and just up or down.
Yeah.
The majority of Americans agree with voter ID.
Yes.
The majority of Americans agree that we should have chain of custody, which means we should know how the ballot's going and who's touching it.
And that no one should touch it except an election official or a postal worker. Certainly not anybody from either party. There's simply no reason to.
Which goes to ballot harvesting.
Yes, correct.
Which, if you don't know what ballot harvesting is, it is paid activists going door to door to door, collecting thousands of ballots, changing that chain of custody, disrupting it, and having a partisan take as they are holding people's ballots in their hands for political purposes and political gain. It's really bad.
People don't know that's even happening, Ron.
They don't, and that's why Republicans are so against it.
They're against it when they hear it described, but also it's not a hypothetical that we're testing.
It's happening everywhere. Yep. People are for signature verification and signature matching. People are for poll watchers being able to observe, all these things that are really, really common sense and all part of the Georgia law. Was there anything in the Georgia law that your poll found that was racist?
No, and just so we're clear, we didn't even call it the Georgia law. There'd be no reason to. You don't want to jaundice. You never want to jaundice or bias the respondent by saying the Democrats believe this or the Republicans believe that when you're just trying to get an objective read on these measures. But people are very in favor of all the ballot integrity, ballot protection, voter security. This is important, voter security measures. And when we tested the Georgia law piece by piece without ever identifying deciding whose it is and who believes in it and who doesn't. Every single one of them got a majority, some much stronger than others. But in this survey, in the nationwide survey, 6% of all respondents approved of all single 9 or 10 of the measures. Not a single respondent in the entire survey opposed all of them, which really tells you something. Yes. And look, the sum of all of its parts is not always going to work. People may not say, well, taken together now, I don't know, maybe that's just too much too fast. But if you take them bite by bite, you realize these are not only popular, I just want to say it again, they're non-controversial. And I would challenge the Democrats very simply. I'd say, without calling other people names, without shutting down dissent and dialogue, really, dialogue, explain what exactly you're against. Explain why you're against the majority of voters in your own party and everybody's polling that says they favor voter ID. They want verification. Why is it controversial to say one person, one vote means I know that you, Ronna McDaniel, cast your vote in the state of Michigan, not Pennsylvania, where you thought it might help a candidate that you like better, that your signature matches, that you showed an ID, and that, let's just say, because you're such a busy woman flying around the country helping the party, Ronald, let's just say you couldn't be in Michigan that day and you wanted to vote absentee or you wanted to vote early at the polls. Okay, but when you come, I look at you and I want to know who you are. And why is that controversial? I thought we believe in the dignity and the individuality and the identification of each person. How did this become controversial? So I want to keep saying that word because it's one thing for something to be popular and poll well, but it's quite another that they're trying to imbue some type of sinister motive to measures and security measures that are helping to both protect and promote voting for all.
Exactly. Protect and promote voting for all. And
we're for that. I want to make very
clear.
We're
for that. We want everyone to vote. But I do think if I lived in Ohio 10 years ago, I shouldn't be getting a ballot when I've been living in Michigan for 10
years.
And your point of ballots being sent to voters who didn't request them. Requesting it is part of the verification.
Correct.
You know, I often say when you order a new checkbook, I don't know if people still use checks. I still use checks.
Yes.
I'm old. I'm not all on Venmo and PayPal. But when you order that check, you track it. You want to make sure you know that those checks are coming to your mailbox because it's that valuable. You know what that means. That's how I feel about a ballot. I don't want a ballot to just pop up in my mailbox and I didn't know it was coming because it's important to me as a voter to protect that ballot that is intended for my vote, for me to fill out. And what you saw with Democrats, and I'm just going to go through with a few things that they're pushing. Getting rid of voter ID, sending live ballots to voters whether they request it or not, not cleaning up voter rolls, meaning not removing people from voter rolls who've moved away from a state, making sure that the file is current and accurate. We just saw recently in Vermont a law passed, or the legislature just overturned the governor who vetoed, get this, non-citizens voting in their elections. So if we were all worried about Russia interference in 2016 and Russia colluded, Vermont just said, great, you don't even have to be a citizen to vote in our elections. That just got put into law. The RNC is going to sue. But these are the types of things that the Democrats are doing to degrade our elections, which degrades our democracy, which degrades our freedom. And that's what's at stake.
It also degrades the one person, one vote.
Exactly.
Constitutional guarantee, because if you count someone else's vote who should not have voted for whatever reason, then you are discounting a person who did vote. Because they wanted to and they were allowed to and they went through the entire process. So that sounds unconstitutional on its face, but one has to wonder, Ronna, what makes the Democrats in Vermont even think they can do that?
Yeah.
Even think they can try that? It's the attempt that's so offensive. And it's the sort of, I dare you, let me poke you in the eye, Republican Party, and call you racist if you somehow think the Constitution is a paper towel and not the law of the land. So that we can abrogate the Constitution by just saying, you know what, I think here in Vermont, non-citizens should vote. We'll just give it a try. We'll give it a try. And then
other we'll try it in Georgia. And then we'll try it in Florida. That's
their
hope.
Other states will do it. So it is kind of funny, too. You know, a lot of the grievances from the Democratic Party and their charges of racism and xenophobia and all the slurs they use every day. It's so funny. It usually doesn't come from the party that is in charge of everything in Washington. It usually is like what the losers say, if you will. But here they are, just wanting to make sure whatever magic in a bottle, they were lightning a bottle, magic wand they were able to wave in 2020 that somehow helped Joe Biden be the standard bearer in the future of the Democratic Party, because really nothing screams future energy and new quite like Joe Biden. And so they want to make sure if you can do that, you can do it again in, well, next year in 2022, but again in 2024. So they're just trying to, I think, in lieu of great policies, coherent messages, transparency as an administration, as a White House, and some of their policies and their programs. In lieu of that, they just want to make sure that they can always win at the ballot box.
Exactly.
The rest won't matter.
It's all about power.
And I'll tell you, people are very worried. They really are worried, regardless of for whom you voted, what you think of the 2020 elections. People are very worried, Rana, that there's just too much time. There's too much uncertainty. There's too much behind the scenes. We have Ring and Nest cameras all over the country, and yet your poll workers can't go watch.
Exactly.
Can't go watch the
ballots. You're not allowed
to
watch the ballots being
counted. And I want the Democratic poll watchers there too. I think you agree with that completely.
I want them both there.
It's this word bipartisan is very important to people also, because they feel that because elections are bipartisan, meaning everybody can vote, then they want to make sure that those who are watching the way the votes are counted are bipartisan. Now, it's not presumptive negativity that everybody's cheating and there's fraud, but why even tempt it?
But you know what? If you know that your friend was there watching and somebody you trust validates, hey, I saw that election happen, I saw every ballot, it was legitimate, that helps create assurances. That is good for our country. And if you look at this last election, one of the things that we need to fix coming out of COVID, which COVID gave Democrats a cover to do a lot of things, which I think one of the worst was push our poll watchers away from watching. Pushing our poll watchers out in 2020, like Democrats did, it really hurt a lot of people's confidence in the election. And that's why it's so critical that we codify that into law heading into 2022.
It is. And Rana, why not live cams, live feeds?
Yeah, why not live feeds?
We have that for everything under the sun, and we don't have it.
And why did it only happen in Democrat counties?
It's very,
why is it only Republicans right now saying I was disenfranchised? So my point to everybody listening and watching is we're taking this very seriously. The RNC is already involved in 20 lawsuits right now across the country on election integrity issues. We're already ramping up for 2022. We know that Democrats used COVID as a cover to make broad sweeping changes to election laws that were on the books and bypassing legislatures and using the courts to make massive changes that changed that election. And we're not going to let that happen for 2022. And your polling shows that the American people are with us.
There's no
they
question
really
on
are.
That. They are. There's no, and they know that, which is why they just call names. The other thing I wanted to mention is I don't know that you're listeners, your viewers are aware that the RNC had gone through 52 lawsuits before Election Day.
Yeah.
I mean, this was going on for a while, that this being making sure that the access to voting was protected for all and that people weren't trying to game the system and use a pandemic as an excuse, not a reason, as an excuse to either thwart some people from going to the polls or help others who have never gone to the polls or aren't registered to vote. And let's call it as it is here. The RNC had 2.6 million volunteers last time you busted through the numbers that Obama Biden had even. So what did that mean? It meant you had this enormous ground game, enormous ground operation, coupled with a candidate, Donald Trump, who was willing to do 58 rallies and go wherever he needed to go
everywhere,
and connect
tireless
with the voters. So what did the Democrats do? Well, they needed to make up. They didn't have a compelling, energetic candidate.
Really?
If everybody forgets. They had 26 who ran against, 26 Democrats ran for president, which means 25 of those Democrats didn't want Joe Biden to be president. They agreed with us. And that makes you wonder, but we'll do a different podcast on that. On this issue, they had to make up for a lack of an energetic, compelling candidate and a ground game, all these volunteers. And they did that, as you know, by showing up at people's houses with ballots.
Yeah.
You know, do you know you can vote? Do you know you can request
here's
a ballot? Here's
ballots.
Your ballot.
Yeah.
Here's your. And so that is something that needs to be looked into for sure. Can never happen again. The pandemic was a once in a century reason to relax some measures and put others in place. It should no longer be an excuse, since thank God we're crawling out of the pandemic now. It should no longer be an excuse to be voting for a couple of months and to be counting for just as long.
Exactly.
People don't think that. They think I've banked my vote. It should be counted. And I do have to part company with some who were telling people, don't vote until day of, don't vote until day of, don't vote until day of. That just was not a good message, a good directive, because you're taking a chance that any of us can get out of the house that day for some reason, let alone to the polling place. And so,
I'll tell you, as a party, we want you to bank your vote.
You want to bank the vote.
Because then it frees up our staff or our volunteers to go get those votes that we still have to turn out. So to have to get every vote out on election day is really tough for a big operation. So we want those votes banked. And that's why a lot of these election measures that are being passed are so critical for the voters and for Republicans across the country, and why we need to make sure we push back on this Democrat media narrative. I'm going to tell you something shocking, but the media doesn't always tell the truth. And they seem to really like Joe Biden. So if you really want to look at these laws, I challenge people, go look at it for yourself. Go look at the law.
Well, they need to do that, because what you say may be true, but it's also the fact that people just don't do their homework anymore.
They don't.
The media didn't hear, like, this is bad, that's good, this is this, this is this. And you saw that with some in corporate America, too. You don't have a flotilla of people in the C-suite or your legal department to just read it and then give you a rational analysis of what it actually says, not what somebody in a tweet said it said. And so I think that's incredibly important. Also, all of these extended voting measures really can hurt challengers. And there are plenty of Democratic challengers, there are plenty of Republican challengers. I think candidates who aren't incumbents, who aren't well-known, who aren't well-financed, are at a tremendous disadvantage, because often you get those matching funds, you get more cash, or you can be more creative, you're saving your money to put your ads up or go do more voter contact closer to Election Day. But now we have Election Day lasts for 2 months.
Yeah.
And so who cares about an October surprise when you voted in September? It won't matter. And people, you even saw this last time, after what was supposed to be the third debate but ended up being the second presidential debate, people had already cast their vote, and they say, I wish I could vote for Donald Trump.
Well, we talked about that earlier when you were showing me the findings, and the Democrats push and push and push to have voting earlier and earlier. But there is a point to finishing the race.
Yes.
There are a lot of things that happen between September and October and November.
Much.
That will help you learn more about that candidate and decide who's best. So why wouldn't you want to see them make their full argument? You know, you don't start a trial or finish a trial in the middle. You wait for the defense,
yes,
and the prosecution to rest, and then closing arguments. And in a lot of cases, we're voting before the closing arguments are made right now. And I think that's detrimental to our elections long term. And we'll talk about later the Commission on Presidential Debates, which we're taking on, because I think they were a factor. But I want to thank you so much for doing this poll for us, for being in this space.
It was eye-opening.
It was eye-opening. And I think it's going to help us as we move forward in 2022. And just thanks for being such a leader in our party and a voice that helps us create messaging and understand how to navigate and create that compass so that we can win in 2022, because so much is at stake. I also want to ask you, because you say this a lot, and we've done a lot of things together. You took on the campaign manager role for Donald Trump in 2016. You led the first ever successful presidential campaign by a woman in our
party. For either party.
And elected Donald Trump. But one of the things I love that I used to hear you say is, I was hiding in plain sight. What does that mean? Tell me about Donald Trump and what that meant. Because I think that is just, you're such a wordsmith anyway. I love listening to you speak. But you would say that, I was hiding in plain sight. And I think that says a lot about President Trump to understand your strength and bring you in. But it also says something about others who missed that. And why didn't they bring you in earlier?
Well, I'm writing a whole book about this.
I know,
I'm
excited.
I'll only tell you what I've
this.
Said publicly before, and you'll have to get the book to hear the rest. But the fact is this, is that Donald Trump elevated me to campaign manager not when I was 29 or even 39. I was 49. And I was hiding in plain sight because I, like many other people, had worked super hard for many years, for decades. And I would sort of grin through and grind it out, but grin and bear a lot of the exclusions that happen, including in the Republican Party, and not feel sorry for myself, just try to figure out how to build a better mousetrap. What is my market distinction in a pretty crowded field of pollsters or a pretty crowded field of consultants? And always try to work a little bit harder, think a little bit more creatively. And let's be frank, polling to this moment is in a world of hurt.
It really is.
You have Democratic pollsters apologizing, as if that matters, for getting 2016 and 2020 wrong both times, even though it was Trump and then Biden, wrong both times for undercounting the Trump voter.
Exactly.
But I think it was, I think Donald Trump, because the normal political motivators did not apply to him, and he already didn't have, you know, the swamp working for him, or he didn't have the same political consultants of many decades who were just going to get it right this time, that he was able to build a fresh team. And he did that person by person. And we relied a ton on the RNC. Katie Walsh was there at the time, and from the beginning, she told me about the voter scores. She had us all in a briefing in the 14th floor conference room at Trump Tower. She must have had 30 people in the room days after I became campaign manager. And she said, I want to show you what we're doing. And it was very impressive, because after Mitt Romney lost in 2012, after Nancy Pelosi had become speaker in 6, but then the Republicans took over. Like, after all of that, I think the Republican Party just got better at building its technological capability, at making sure we had more volunteers, that our voter scores were complementing the polling. And I just remember her showing me what was going on in Wisconsin. And I put it in the back of my head. Donald Trump was behind by way double digits in Wisconsin, but I put it in the back of my head because she said we have a competitive Senate race there. The Speaker of the House is from Wisconsin. The chairman of the party is from Wisconsin. Scott Walker has run for governor 3 times in 4 or 5 years. He's in Wisconsin.
A recall.
So I was like this. I said, oh. And so all of the investments, so much of the investment that had gone into Wisconsin then allowed Donald Trump to come in with his messaging and turn Wisconsin Republicans for the first time since 1984. Wow. Neither of the Bushes had won it. President Bush had won it in those 3 elections. So it really was just remarkable in that.
But Kellyanne, don't you think your experience, like you said, you came in not at 29,
not
at
39. 49.
You don't look 49.
I'm 54 now. I don't look 49 because I'm now 54.
But you came in at that age. But don't you think the experience and the fact that you had to have that grit to survive? And I'm going to say, it was not a woman's world when you started in D.C. It was not. I know because I was working there in the 90s as a young girl out of college. It wasn't a woman's world. You fought. You earned every single thing. And finally, somebody said, this is the right person. But thank goodness they did, because you had the wherewithal to take what the RNC gave, to understand how to put the pieces together. But more than anything, I'm just really glad to know you and have you as a friend.
Thank you. Right back at
you, sister. Thank you, Kellyanne.
Absolutely.
I'm Ronna McDaniel, and this is what Republicans stand for. Join us next time on Real America.
Paid for by the Republican National Committee. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. www.gop.com